Summit Land Conservancy was successful in its offer to purchase nearly 23 acres along the Weber River in Oakley. In the studio with me, I have Executive Director Cheryl Fox. Good morning.
Good morning.
So congratulations on this. This is the same property you'd mentioned, what, a month or so ago?
That's right. Well, it's not done yet. So we have it under contract, which is, we're very excited about that. We haven't purchased fee title outright land in the past. We've bought a lot of conservation easements, which means that we just are basically buying the development rights off the property. This was a situation where the landowner, you know, needed to be done and move on and move off the property. So just buying the development rights didn't make sense. So we had made an offer a month or so, 6 weeks ago, and that was not accepted. And after a little bit of time, we made another offer, and that was accepted. So we have it under contract. We're now in the due diligence portion of the purchase. And eventually, once we get through that and make sure that everything is good, we will be doing a capital campaign to raise some of the money for the purchase. And then we'll finally close on it on January 31st, if all goes as planned.
So what if you, in fact, don't raise the money?
That'll be an interesting question. We are able to get a loan, and so we would probably be going back to some other funding sources like that. But yes, we will definitely be hoping that, you know, some of our members and supporters will be interested in protecting this property. It's right in the heart of the town of Oakley. It has a half a mile of river frontage. We're removing three development rights, but the way the lot is configured, those development rights would probably have been built really, really close to the river, which, you know, impacts the water quality downstream. And then the other issue is that, you know, when those homes go up, the public access goes away. And there has not been a lot of public access traditionally on this property. You know, it's private property, right? So that's the way it works. So we are going to secure the public access along the river for this piece.
All right. So there will be, one house would be able to be built there? Or
there is an existing home on the property, and that will stay there. Somebody might renovate it or, tear it down and build a new one or something like that. It's a house about the same vintage as I am. So there are some options there.
Yeah. Okay. So when does your money go hard in terms of
the money goes hard on November 18th.
Okay.
So that will be the end of our due diligence.
All right. And you're not releasing the purchase price?
You know, not at the moment. We want to make sure that we get through the due diligence and all the rest of that. And then we'll, you know, when we start fundraising, I think it's really important to be transparent about that. So we will talk about the purchase price at that point.
All right. And what you're talking about is that then you will put the conservation easement on it, and then you put the property back on the market. So are you losing that money, or these current property owners don't want to take that tax break?
Yeah, that's a really good point. You know, not everybody can do that. Landowners have a lot of different needs, and they, you know, sometimes they can take a tax break or do something like that, and sometimes they really just need to kind of be done and walk away, and we need to be respectful of that. So in this situation, the landowner does need to walk away. So yes, our idea is to put a big conservation easement on the property, secure the public access along the river, and then resell the property to somebody who understands that basically they're getting a, you know, 20 acre or something preserve, and the one home site on it. And we don't think that, you know, it won't sell for the same price as what we're paying for it, but that's where the capital campaign comes in, and that's where the public benefit comes in as well. You know, we're providing this public access. We're working towards the clean water. We're protecting the wildlife habitat, which is our mission.
Yeah.
It's not our mission to make money on real estate.
So what do you think that gap's going to be, that shortfall?
You know, that is it's a little more than the capital campaign that we're going to be looking to raise, which is probably about $200,000, but we will be looking for some other funding sources as well.
Okay.
Partner with us.
All right. You'd also noted in your press release that this is the seventh of the Conservancy's Weber River Watershed Initiative. So what does that mean?
So since 2009, the Summit Land Conservancy has been working to protect the farms and ranches along the banks of the Weber River. We think that the Weber River is the most threatened natural resource in northern Utah. 20% of Utah's population drink that water, including us here in Park City. And it's a fragmented landscape, which means that it's been divided and divided and divided down the generations. And so the farms and ranches are generally 40 acres, 80 acres, 90 acres. They're not big landscapes. So they are, and they're also very expensive because they're right on the river. So those are some impediments for conservation, because people like to do, a lot of times conservation groups like to do big pieces of property and property where their money can go a little farther. On the Weber River, you know, those properties are expensive. But we are Summit County's local land trust, and we feel like if we don't do it, who will? So we have had a Weber River Watershed Initiative in place for a long time. And, you know, it's, I feel like we're doing stepping stones, and you do one and then you do one up here and then you get the one in the middle. And it's a little bit like a jigsaw puzzle, or maybe a quilt is a nicer image. And we just put these pieces together. So this year we were allocated a contract with the federal government to do two more of those parcels out in Wanship and in Hennifer. And they do, they, you know, they fill in the gaps between parcels that we've done in years past. So, you know, when our donors support us, that's what this does. It takes years to get these projects finished, and it takes a lot of legal expertise. It takes appraisals and accounting and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, some, I feel like, woohoo, we get one, and then a long time goes by, and then woohoo, we get another. So I hope that people realize that, you know, when they come out and support us, this is the work that we're doing every day.
Yeah. You don't think people, given with the open space bonds that we've seen pretty much every other year on a ballot or two, that people are getting weary of open space?
I sure hope not. You know, I know that there are a lot of other things and things that we need, but I've started to call it human habitat. All the studies are showing that, you know, kids aren't healthy because they're spending their time on pavement and computer screens. And they need to spend their time in green spaces. And adults are the same way. So we're protecting human habitat, and I think that's pretty important.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Well, the bond is, speaking of bonds, for Bonanza is on the ballot. So I do hope that people support that effort the city has to protect 1,400 acres of open space up on Guardsman Pass, should that property become available. But, you know, that those bonds will only be issued if a purchase price is agreed upon, and that hasn't happened yet. So, you know, we might be paying that or we might not. It just depends.
Okay. Hey, Cheryl, we'll see you next month. Thank you.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:18. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatch. Well, the Summit County Council meets tomorrow starting at 1:50 with a heavy-duty agenda this week. In the studio with a preview, Summit County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Let's see, proposed changes in the code for special events. First, more special events will be permitted by a special events manager. That'll be Travis English. He's currently our fair director, and he maintains that role. And
that's,
what, a promotion?
That's true.
Here?
Well, you know how it goes. It's more responsibility and probably not that much more money. So that tends to be how we work these days.
All right. So this will still be reviewed, all of these special events permits, by the planning department, the health department, the sheriff's office, I
guess?
Yeah,
I think a couple of things. First of all, we're seeing a lot more special events out in the county that that require some type of organization by us. And the coordination between larger special events like a Sundance, where we have to coordinate with Park City and with the event holder. That's why we brought Travis into this, and he was working a little bit in it anyway, in trying to coordinate some of the efforts on the east side of the county. This is really a large effort to make our codes consistent with Park City, so it's a lot easier to administer. We're all pretty much doing it the same way anyway, but this was also bringing our code up to date.
Yeah. Well, as you mentioned, the provisions will be similar to Park City's, but one of the city's criteria for allowing special events is looking at economic and community value. You don't. Okay.
Yeah, we didn't do that at this point. It adds a level of complexity that we're not prepared for yet. You know, if that becomes an issue in the future, as kind of a gatekeeper for special events, we may have to institute like something like that. But we did have a specific conversation about that.
All right. So a more precise definition of sizes of special events. So you got level 1, 2, and 3. Level 1 is 0 to 200 people. 2 is 200 to 499, and then level 3 over 500. Why set up this system? Just to give you
again,
crowd control?
It's to mirror what Park City does. So it's very similar. It's a way of managing, and it's a way that has been tried and true for a few years in Park City.
So level 3 also includes any filming activity, regardless of the numbers?
Regardless of the numbers, yes. And there are some ways to deal with that. I mean, there are some small filmmakers that come in every once in a while that don't have the large budgets that we've experienced with some of the stuff that's gone on in the past 2 years. And we can work specifically with them. But yeah, this tends to deal with some of the larger stuff.
And Level 3 is approved by you as opposed to the special events manager.
That's what's proposed in this. That's correct.
All right. So are we seen anything in the horizon then for the Park City Film Studio?
I have not heard anything specifically, but we definitely want to have it in our code how we're going to deal with it.
All right. The government facilities new construction and renovation policy returns to council. The council had questions about how to hire three types of energy specialists to assist in the construction. You have all of that information?
Yeah, we're going to present some more information to them. This is more of an ongoing conversation than it is whether they'll actually adopt anything or not tonight or tomorrow night. But, you know, the great thing in this situation is that the track that we're taking is a track that the state, our state government, has already taken. And we're largely mirroring some of the work that they've done as they build new facilities and some of the policies that they've put in place to become more sustainable with their building efforts. So in a lot of ways, they have already cracked the nut on this issue and how to do it. We'd like to take advantage of that to support our own sustainability goals.
All right. There are also the capital projects will be presented for the coming year. They include the Camas building, the library.
It does.
$5 million allocated for the county fairgrounds, yet you haven't decided how much to spend there.
That's correct. I wanted to put it in the manager's recommended budget. We wanted to put an acknowledgement that project was coming. The council was appropriately critical of some of the master plan elements last week, as well as bringing up issues of, you know, what are the partnerships going to bring to the table in a project like this. So, you know, we're not on any time schedule per se. In order to get something hard and fast into the budget, we can amend. Since we have some savings for this project, we can amend the budget at any time when the council feels it's appropriate and we have the details solidified that they'd like to see.
All right. There's also the Klein Dolly parcel in Lower Jeremy there for $3.7 million. So that comes out of the capital project, huh?
Well, that's how we're handling it as far as an expenditure. So we would... Some of the funding that would come into the capital plan in order to purchase that property, if the council chose to move forward, would come from open space funding. Some of it would come from municipal funding. So this was just the most appropriate place to be transparent about it.
All right. Some of the projects listed will be dropped if the transit sales taxes are not approved. Those include the Ecker remote parking and small cities grants and joint projects. Can you talk to me about those?
Well, sure. I mean, the projects that have been proposed around the two sales tax initiatives, certainly that we do not have the funding to do those if the taxes are not approved by the voters. That's not a threat. It's simply a reality of our budget. It doesn't mean that over time, as the county moves on, that we wouldn't propose doing those in the future, a long time in the future. But, you know, those are dependent on those taxes passing.
So the Ecker remote parking, is this near Ecker Hill Middle School?
It's in the view lot that exists off the highway, right adjacent to the Ecker Middle School.
All right, so that's state property.
It is. Well, it's actually federal property because it's a federal highway. So we've already been in conversations with UDOT, who manages that for the federal government and the Federal Highway Administration about that possibility, and we feel confident enough that a project like that could move forward, that we're willing to put it in the list.
So does the view remain?
Well, the view will always be there. It would just be accessed by those parking there, as opposed to those pulling off the highway. It really isn't used that way anyway. So,
all right. Lots of budgets also. You'll be reviewing the North Summit Fire District. That was interesting that we're planning to build a fire station there in Tollgate, huh?
Well, yeah, and they're already underway on that, as I understand. And as I was reading through the packet, I'm encouraged that it's going to be off the grid. They're going to power that by solar, and a very innovative project for that part of the county.
All right. And that's something that's paid for just by North Summit Fire District residents?
That is correct.
Budget for Mountain Regional, are we talking about any increases in water rates there? Or?
I didn't see anything in the packet, but the council will get that detail, and I'm sure we'll be asking that question on Wednesday. I didn't see any increase to rates in the packet.
And then what about for the Snyderville Basin Recreation? Any increases there?
Not any increases there. And they'll be highlighting their stuff. It didn't really seem like anything unusual. A little bit of property purchase to prepare for expansion of field space in the future, and we'll get the details on that tomorrow.
All right. Again, the dispute over an accessory building in Silver Creek, the appellant's accessory structure, was turned down by Community Development Director Pat Putt. That was after the Snyderville Planning Commission recommended denial. The finding is that this owner already has an accessory dwelling unit and you just get one?
That's correct. They already have an accessory dwelling unit as well. There's some question about how the accessory dwelling, the one proposed, was going to be utilized. And I think those were the main questions that the Planning Commission contemplated. The limit is one, and I think according to the code, the Planning Commission and the Community Development Director acted accordingly.
So the staff recommendation here is denial.
It remains, correct.
Yeah. And then there's a second accessory dwelling unit
on
the agenda.
Accessory dwelling night.
This is on Highland Drive. Two units on a parcel are not allowed in Highland Estates. The appellant wants the unit for a special needs daughter. So why staff?
Well, as I understand it from the packet, it looks like they were proposing something that was larger than what we would normally allow in an accessory dwelling. I think the limit is 1,000 square feet. They were proposing 1,900 square feet. And I think that, coupled with maybe some other issues, caused them to look at denying that under the code. But certainly under a special exception, that's something that's the council's purview, so they will be looking at that.
Yeah, why not just remodel the house or expand the house?
Well, I think that's one of the questions that staff had along in this process. Probably why they were why they're recommending denial according to the code.
All right. Council will also decide if it wants to continue with Mountain Accord under the new structure. So we've got this Central Wasatch Commission, right?
And that's correct.
Do you have a recommendation on whether we continue?
Their conversations, they've been conversing about this over the last few months. It looks like they're prepared to adopt that. I have not heard anything to the contrary of that.
Okay. The county's still paying $50,000?
That's correct. So we made our 2016 payment, and we're budgeted in the proposed budget for the 2017 payment.
And any nagging questions from the council on this?
Well, the question that still remains and seems to be positive moving forward was whether the 900-plus acres included in the conservation area was still included as it was moving forward in Congress. We're seeing that it is included, so we're still encouraged by that, but we're keeping an eye on it.
Okay, and then a joint meeting with the Eastern Summit County Agricultural Preservation Committee, ESAP, to review their standards for judging ag and open space lands. Anything in particular?
Appropriate that Cheryl was just here. She was just talking about a couple of properties that are under consideration in the North Summit area. I think we've had quite a bit of turnover on ESAP in the last year, have not had any real substantive conversations between the council and ESAP to kind of get synced on their goals and synced on the vision that is trying to be achieved. And they need to look at those standards and make sure that both groups are still comfortable with them and maybe council gives some advice on how they'd like ESAP to administer those.
Okay. And the photos I saw with regard to the hole number 11 on the golf course looked actually real good. So is that dropped?
It hasn't been officially been dropped. We had a meeting on site
Friday.
Which day we had the meeting on site, but a very encouraging meeting. We walked through the whole area to understand what what TCFC had done in the last week and a half to try to mitigate some of the stuff that had gone on. And also the building was going to, the ski maintenance building was going to start to come down that day, which was going to move even more of some of the collected dirt in or soil into the hole that was created by bringing that building down. So I'm encouraged by what I heard that day. We'll see in the next week as we get final survey done on that hole for the homeowners association to make a determination.
Yeah, just a lot of angst, though. I mean, and it seems like it could have just been solved with just better communication.
Yeah, there probably is a case for some better communication between TCFC and the homeowners. You know, TCFC feels like they did do a good job, obviously there's a difference of opinion on that.
Okay, and you went through your Brigadier General.
Haven't gone through it yet. No. It's November 5th. It's this Saturday.
Okay.
I'm tossing around everything on getting ready for that this week.
Buffing the shoes,
getting the uniform ready.
Yeah. So, again, the Land Component Commander, that's your...
That is correct. So I'll be in charge of the Army Forces of the Utah Army National Guard.
Great. Okay, Tom, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:32. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the local news hour on KPCW. The Historic Preservation Board meets tomorrow to make a finding on the historic Star Hotel, whether or not it's historically significant. In the studio, I have Park City Planner Andrew Ground along with Planning Director Bruce Erickson. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
So currently the old boarding house and hotel at 227 Main Street has been deemed historically significant. The owners would like to change that, Anya?
Correct. They want to remove the designation for it to be on the historic site inventory, and that way they can demolish it and redevelop the site.
Okay. The staff is saying no way?
Pretty much, yeah. We're saying no. We think it's still historic and it meets the criteria to stay listed.
All right. And I guess there were a number of questions that you raised for that you'd like the HPB to kind of review. All of them except for one, I think the staff found that it does comply with being historically significant.
Correct. The one part that I think we found that didn't comply was listing it as a landmark structure, and landmarks are the highest designation, meaning that they're eligible for the National Register of Historic Places. Mm-hmm. We think there's been a few alterations that make it ineligible for that, but definitely still historic on our local inventory.
Interesting, as you looked in the photos in the packet, what it looks like today is nothing like the original structure. It was actually a really good-looking house. Reminded me of my grandma's house, actually.
Yeah, well, it is a very crazy structure. It started out being a house, like you mentioned, and then they added the Star Hotel facade, or the face of it, to the front to create the boarding house in the 1920s. And then in the 70s, the porch got enclosed. Probably just, you know, due to the demands at the time, and it kind of took the appearance that it has today. So it's a very unusual building, I guess, given the amount of alterations that have occurred.
Yeah, so if, in fact, the owner does have to keep, what is it that has to be kept? Is the kind of the Spanish-looking, you know, arches there, is that the historic part?
You got it. So the changes that were made to convert the house into the Star Hotel in the 1920s have gained significance on their own. And there's so much of it there that really it's the Star Hotel that and the Spanish Revival look that we want to preserve, not so much the 1885 house that's been swallowed by it.
All right. A lot of damage to the house. I mean, are we just asking for another centennial building?
Hopefully not. We're hoping that something good can come of it and it doesn't just sit vacant.
Yeah. But I guess I had read in the packet there was a lot of water damage to that. I mean, can that really be fixed?
True. And I think, you know, there are certain things that we're going to have to look at more closely when we have a development plan in front of us as to whether or not it has to be reconstructed or panelized or if it can be preserved in whole as it is. That's something that's going to have to be reviewed by the Historic Preservation Board at a later date. Right now, we're just looking, you know, is it historic? Does it belong on our inventory?
Okay. Can we talk a little bit about, though, Bruce, just in terms of, again, if it's, it could be pretty significant in terms of, I mean, it'd be a lot easier just to demolish it and start over and rebuild something that looks like that, no?
It would be, but I think the mission that we're trying to espouse here is that the historic district is home, and the first obligation is to preserve what's historic. The second obligation is to reconstruct if we can't preserve. So The first step here is to make sure the building stays on the listing or not, depending on what the Historic Preservation Board wants to do. Once we're through with that, then our folks can take a look with the applicant and decide how much can be saved and how much can be preserved. But this is a very special commercial building on Main Street. This isn't a historic house in the neighborhood with 100 houses around it. This is the only one with a Spanish Revival facade. This is one of the very, very few that's gone through this kind of transition, very much like Park City did, where we started out with an old miner's house. The miner's house was swallowed up in a boarding house when the U.S. government decided that it wasn't a good idea to require miners to live in mining company-provided housing. So then there was a miner's boarding house. Then it was a whiskey distillery during Prohibition. I think there's going to be a way that we're going to be able to preserve what Main Street looks like, do our best to protect that building, and then reconstruct the rest of it for adaptive reuse.
Yeah. Well, when you look at the building right across the street, it's now that design place, right? Right across from Grappa.
There. Right.
You know, that building, the only thing that remains of the original building is the front facade.
Right.
So can that be done here with the Star Hotel? You just pull that off and everything else goes down?
The front facade on, well, it's a little different. The problem with the Centennial is the price of doing things. And
I'm talking about the building next to the Centennial.
Right.
It's that green building.
Right, the green building. Yeah. So in this particular case, I think we got to get through this determination of significance first. And then Anya and Hannah Tyler, who actually did the research on this thing, Hannah and Anya will sit down and figure out what can or cannot happen. And we're not making that determination at this point. We're just making a determination that it's important and to stay on our listing of historic sites.
Okay. You have any concern, though, that we have another centennial on our hands?
Always. Always, always, always. The historic district is home. That's what people care about. That's why there were 5,000 people on Main Street trick-or-treating last night. That's part of our job. That's what Anya and Hannah do.
There was some talk about one time, perhaps the city just purchasing the Centennial. Is that?
Well, I'm not in charge of the city. If I was writing checks, I might have a different approach than what we're writing checks for. But that's not my job. My job is to enforce the land management code and the historic district guidelines.
So how long can a condemned building stand until it falls down?
You know, I'm praying for snow. So I may have a little different opinion than Anya on how long it can stand up. I think it'll make it through the winter without a problem. They've had a structural engineer go in there and make recommendations for stabilization at the request of Anya Gron and Hannah Tyler. So we think it'll make it through the winter and we'll be able to do something.
That's the Star Hotel that you talked
about.
That's
correct. Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Real quick, the Bonanza Park Bonanza Park development having a couple of open houses in the next couple of weeks?
Right. They're going to have a couple of open houses. Then it's going to come back to the Planning Commission to take a look at the pre-master plan development process. We have some concerns, and the applicant is busily trying to resolve them with respect to traffic, transportation, and the ratio of housing to commercial.
Okay. Anything else you guys wanted to mention?
Yep. One thing very important here, Anya just finished getting her historic home financing professional certificate, which is very rare and very complicated. Took her the whole summer and a trip to Washington, D.C. to take the test. So we're very proud of her.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
I do want to mention, though, that those BOPA open houses this Wednesday, November 4th, and then again next Tuesday, November 10th, 6 to 8 p.m., both at the Park City Marriott on Sidewinder. Thanks.
Great. Thanks, Leslie.
Thank you.
8:41 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the Local News Hour here on KPCW. Well, coming up this weekend, the third annual fundraiser to raise money and awareness for the National Nordic Foundation. In the studio with details, I have Carrie Morgan along with the athletes, Maddie Morgan and Janae Rasmussen. Good morning.
Good morning.
So the WAX weekend is taking place when and where? This is Maddie here.
The WAX fundraiser that we're doing for the National Nordic Foundation is this weekend, Saturday, the 5th of November.
Okay, when and where?
It's going to be at Storm Cycles in Kimball Junction, as well as Bout Time. They're both located in Kimball Junction. Bout Time is next to the Starbucks in over in Redstone area. Yeah.
Okay. So, Janae, how does it work?
So you bring any skis you need that you've just been sitting around in your garage and they're, like, pretty dry and they need some wax on them. And you just bring them to us and we'll wax them really quickly and give them back to you. And we just ask for a, like, $15-ish donation, but if you can't do that, it's totally fine.
Okay. So is that what most people pay for, about 15
yeah.
bucks? Great. And so people do wait for their skis. They're not dropped off and then come back?
Sometimes if they don't have a ton, we're not really busy. But sometimes they'll drop them off and come back at the end of the day, and that's fine too.
Okay. And I'm guessing, were you so busy last year? Is that why you've got two locations now?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Actually, it was so well received last year. We waxed over 60 pairs of skis. Just to clarify, we are a Nordic ski team, so you're much better off to have us wax your skate and classic skis. We're not very good at alpine skis or snowboards. and people are more than welcome to actually drop the skis off. We're encouraging them to go pop into Storm Cycles, check out their new line of bikes, head over to About Time Pub and Grub, where they have graciously offered to donate 10% of all of their food sales during our event to our fundraiser. So great time to drop off your skis, let our athletes give them a good clean and a quick wax and get them ready for the season. Go check out their place, get some food, watch your favorite game on their, gosh, I think they have over 20 TV screens in that little place. And they are going to donate towards our cause as well.
Okay, and then you're offering some kind of deal if people bring in two or more pair of skis. What's that?
Four or more pairs of skis.
Okay.
Our athletes, we have a couple of athletes who are willing to go and pick up skis. They'll bring them in on Saturday. They'll get them cleaned up, waxed, and then returned to you. We just know on the weekends sometimes it's hard to try and make something like this. So we are willing to, you know, if you're willing to help our fund, our cause out, we can come and pick them up for you. Get them taken care of, and get them back to you for the donation to NNF.
Okay, so what conditions are you waxing for?
Probably the beginning of the season, it'll be warm-ish, but just like a general universal wax. Nothing too crazy because we're not sure what the temperatures will do yet.
Okay, yeah, in any case, any bit of wax will make a difference, y'all.
Exactly.
All right, so how many members do you have on your team?
Ooh,
this year we have 15 athletes. Okay. Our team has doubled this year, so we're really excited to have athletes ranging from U14 all the way up through U20. So it's going to be a big team this year, and we're excited to start our season. First race is less than a month away in West Yellowstone, and our kids will be going up there for an 8-day long training camp and then wrapping it up with a 2-day race series up there.
There's snow there then, huh?
Not yet. Fingers crossed. We're hoping.
So where do you usually ski out of?
We usually...
White Pine, Soldier Hollow? Or?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We ski all over Park City, also Midway, where Soldier Hollow is, and then we ski up at Solitude sometimes. It just depends on where the snow is. But typically, White Pine or the Utah Olympic Park, they have good trails there as well.
Okay. And what are you looking forward to this year? Do you got any...
We've got Senior Nationals, which is right here in Soldier Hollow, and it gets racers from all over the U.S. and trying to qualify for some big international races. One of those big international races is, again, here, so it's going to be a good, even if you don't make it, you can see some pretty awesome racing going on.
That's going to be the Junior World Championships,
mm-hmm,
right, into January? So you have to qualify before then to make that?
Yep.
Yes, Senior Nationals is the they're the qualifying races for World Juniors.
Okay.
Yeah.
Both of you hope to make World Juniors?
Yeah.
Stretch goal, but yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else you wanted to mention?
I think that's it. I think some good contact information. You can go to our website, www.wasatchnordic.org, or send us an email, wasatchnordic@gmail.com. We've put our team captain, Maddie, as the main contact person. If you want to call her and talk to her about more information or get your skis picked up, you can call 435-659-8512.
Okay. Carrie, Maddie, and Janae, thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
Well, coming up on Thursday, it's the annual Follow Your Dreams benefit to support independent local World Cup ski racer Megan McShane. She joins me now in the studio. Hi, Megan.
Hi, Leslie. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So when and where is this happening?
So this is Thursday evening, November 3rd, 6 to 9 p.m. at the O'Shucks in Quarry Village.
Okay, so a new location for that.
New location. We're super excited to be there. I think it'll be fun. We've got a band, Mud Puddles, coming to play. And then we'll have food and drinks. And I'm hoping that as well as a fundraiser for me, it'll be a super fun party.
Great. So is there a cost to get in? How does it work?
Yes. So there, you don't have to buy a ticket, but there will be a $20 cover charge at the door. And that includes food, music, and one ticket to our raffle. We're going to have a raffle this year. And that includes a lot of really cool ski gear.
Great. Now, you're also going to do the silent auction as well. Have you got that?
Yep. There will be a silent auction. So my main fundraising is coming from the raffle, the silent auction, and then you can always make a tax-deductible donation.
Great. Right. So how much money are you hoping to raise?
If I could get $5,000, I would be super excited.
Okay. And that takes you through the season? Or?
Well, this is just part of my whole fundraising bubble. And so I've been fundraising all summer for my equipment, travel, training costs as I travel World Cup next season.
Yeah. So do you have some sponsors who are chipping in to help? Or just with equipment?
Both donors and sponsors, but I'm super excited to be the ambassador of Alta this upcoming season, which I learned how to ski there, so it's close to my heart.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
So be representing them somehow on helmet or gear or anything?
Yeah, I'm going to have the Alta snowflake right on my forehead of my helmet. So
great. Who have you got working with you for a coach?
It's going to be kind of a piece together puzzle. The next World Cup is in Killington, Vermont, and my boyfriend Cody Marshall is going to come with me. And then the next push is in Europe in December, and I'm still working on finalizing that person. But I am trying to have somebody with me at every World Cup, just because, as you know, it's hard to race World Cup by yourself. So I am pulling together support for that.
Oh, great. So Killington, that's a new venue, huh?
Yeah, I'm excited. We have three World Cups in the U.S. next year. So Killington is the first one, and then we also have Squaw and Aspen in March.
Great. And then, where do you go to? Beaver Creek? Where's the
Beaver Creek is men this year.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
All right. So you've got the first race under your belt. You were in Solden. How'd you do there?
Solden was fun. I wish I skied faster. I need to be a little more aggressive. But the snow was awesome, and it was beautiful weather. And the season has started.
Yeah. So where are you training?
Well, before that, I trained on a glacier in Austria called Maltal. And then after this event on Thursday, I'll be headed out to Colorado to prepare for Killington.
Okay. Now, does the U.S. Ski Team let you train, or do you got to pay them to be part of that, you know, to have access to the mountain and stuff?
Well, so they sell training space at Copper. So it's a U.S. Ski Team venue, but you can also train there with any other team. And so I'll just be joining another team.
Great. So what are your expectations then for this year? I mean, you've got this World Cup spot because you finished first in NORAMs? Is that how it worked?
So last year I won the NORAM overall title, which gives me World Cup spots in every event. So I'll still be focusing on giant slalom and maybe adding some super G and slalom as it fits. And then I'm also very excited because in GS, my main event, my start position is going to be about 20 places better, which is a huge advantage for anyone who knows ski racing. The course will be cleaner, less ruts and stuff like that. So I'm excited to do GS. And then the goal is this year is a world championship year for ski racing. So in February, we have world championships in St. Moritz, Switzerland.
Oh, so that's your goal is to qualify for that?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. How did you bump up 20 spots? That's great.
So the seeding is done by fist points, and I just lowered my fist points at the North American Cup races.
Great. So how much longer you got this in you?
We'll see. I think right now it's a year-by-year basis, but the most important thing is I still love ski racing. I have a lot of fun doing it, and so I feel lucky that I'm able to follow my passion.
Great. All right, if people can't make it to the event on Thursday, they can still help you?
Yes, yeah, so I hope everyone can make it, but if you can't, you can always make a tax-deductible donation on my website, which is meganmcjames.wordpress/donate.
Okay. Good luck to you, Megan.
Thank you very much, Leslie.
Hope to have some great